The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today is Saturday, May 8th, and today we're talking about the massive number of migrants crossing the U.S.-Mexico border and the thousands of children arriving without their parents. In fact, child arrivals at the southern border hit a record number in March. So today you'll hear from Teresa Cardinal Brown. She's the Director of Immigration and Cross-Border Policy at the Bipartisan Policy Center. She's also worked at the Department of Homeland Security and Customs and Border Protection under both Republican and Democratic presidents. But first up, we get a close-up look at the conditions migrant children are facing from CBS News correspondent Maria Villarreal. She was one of the first reporters allowed inside the detention facility in Donna, Texas in late March when the overcrowding was at its peak. Welcome, welcome to the Newsworthy Special Edition Saturday, when we sit down with a different expert or celebrity every Saturday to talk about something in the news. Don't forget to tune in every Monday through Friday for our regular episodes, when we provide all the day's news in just 10 minutes. It's fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. It's time for today's Special Edition Saturday. You ready? Let's do this. Maria, thank you so much for coming on the Newsworthy.
Well, thank you again for having me. I appreciate it.
So I know you were one of the first reporters allowed inside the border facility in Donna, Texas in late March. What was your immediate reaction when you first stepped inside?
We've been covering the border for a while. And so for us, we kind of knew what was heading into the facility. There was a slow increase in the number of unaccompanied minors and also family units coming across the border, many of them crossing over illegally, and a lot of them coming in through the southern border of South Texas. We had been down there in early February, roughly, to kind of see this for ourselves on the ground. As we walked in there, I was still taken aback, because the moment that you step into the dolly area, the docking area, I mean, this is where the buses come in and start to drop people off. Within 30 seconds of us walking in, we see two risers full of young children. I would say predominantly teenagers, but there were definitely some kids under the age of 10 there sitting by themselves. This is just the first batch that we kind of walked in on. They will get a very basic medical screening, specifically for lice as they are outside, and then they are allowed into the actual facility. So we weren't even in the facility yet. We're already seeing the numbers, you know, outside waiting. As we walk in, you can tell the sheer size of this facility is what is kind of overwhelming at first, because you walk into this first room and it is all kind of this intake area. There are dozens of Border Patrol agents at different stations, basically taking in these families and unaccompanied minors, processing their information, where they are from. If it's 14 and older, they will take pictures, they will take fingerprints, they will put it in the system. But for the most part, you have this gigantic room where hundreds of people are inside and they are all being processed. This is the first step as they come in. A lot of these families, you can tell, are extremely nervous. And for the kids that are by themselves, you can tell there is this look of, I think, a little bit of relief, but at the same time, this look of fear, because they are still very much so in an unknown situation, an unknown facility, and an unknown process.
You've described that the facilities were holding far more people than what they were originally designed for. So describe more about the conditions these kids were kept in.
4,100 people were in this facility. More than 3,000 were unaccompanied minors on the day that we went. That in and of itself is kind of a punch in the gut a little bit for even correspondents, reporters, people who have been following this for a while. Because again, as you said, that facility is only meant to hold a certain amount of people, especially during a pandemic. I mean, think of sardines packed on top of sardines is what you're looking at here. If you're lucky, you get a mat to sleep on the floor. Most of the time you don't. There are definitely those infamous foil blankets everybody is given. It is like an ultimate camping experience, but not in a good way. I mean, people are are, you can tell a lot of them probably haven't taken showers in a while. I mean, they're not necessarily sitting in their own filth, but it's not this feeling of like you're getting to go to the bathroom all the time and that there's these great facilities that are accessible to you. I mean, Border Patrol knew that this was coming and they put together this facility, but it was never meant to be a shelter. And the difference is a processing facility is meant for you to come in and, you know, go and leave in 72 hours like the law requires. We did see a lot of children that you could tell were very scared being in there. Some visibly crying while we were walking through, nobody tending to them because, well, who's going to? Border Patrol is already working on a skeleton crew. There's nobody there to necessarily console a 10-year-old girl. And so, you know, for those kids that are there and inside the facility that need to get that energy out, because you have a lot of young kids there, a lot of boys, the best that they can do when they are inside the actual tent part of the facility is they are allowed to go between the plastic pods and they can walk around within the, you know, a small room, but that's about it. At the time, they were allowing them to go outside roughly twice a day, but that wasn't a guarantee and there wasn't anything set in stone. They had created an outdoor area for some of the people that were staying there, but it was very limited in on how often they could go outside.
Were you able to talk directly to anyone that was staying in that facility, even off camera?
It seemed like a majority of the adults, the few that we were able to talk to, majority had an idea of where they were going. And it was just a matter of getting there. A lot of them said, I have family in Chicago. I have family in Florida. I would say most of them will not stay in South Texas. They're in this facility to get processed and to get out. And they will be bused to a kind of shelter site where they will actually square away their travel. And then they will head north and they will wait for their asylum cases to come up. Many of the kids that were being processed were in a different boat. I only really kind of spoke with one kid who was in there and said that he was trying to get to Louisiana. He had an aunt and some family there. You know, this is a roughly 10-year-old boy. He had a way of contacting this family member, but still was very unsure about what was going to happen to him. He didn't realize that he doesn't get to just immediately go to Louisiana to be with his family. He still has to be in a shelter facility. He's still going to get transported because he's there. He's underage. He's an unaccompanied minor. And until they can square away that family member in Louisiana is a good guardian for him, until they can process all of that, I mean, he could be in a shelter facility for 2-3 weeks, maybe longer.
When you were talking to the Border Patrol agents inside the facility, what are they telling you about the situation, how they feel about it, and what they're doing to try to handle all of this that I'm sure is overwhelming them?
The issue that Border Patrol specifically in this that we saw is having, and they were very honest in saying it, we don't want 4,100 people to be in this facility. This is not our job. We understand that we need to bring people in and process them, but sheltering them, feeding them, taking care of toddlers, almost like a daycare facility, that is not what they signed up for. They, in order to do their job and to get those people out of there and process within 72 hours, the way the law requires, they have to lean on HHS, Health and Human Services, to make sure that shelters are set up for these unaccompanied minors. And if they aren't, and at the time they hadn't been, not enough of them at least, then those children sit in this processing facility and they wait. In the end, who you are seeing right now, who is taking the brunt of a lot of the criticism, is Border Patrol. But make no mistakes about it, there are a lot of agencies that are involved in this situation.
Since Villarreal visited that facility in March, more migrant children have been able to move out of Border Patrol custody and into emergency shelters where they are better set up to care for kids. But the problem is definitely not over. Still ahead, what's causing the migrant surge at the southern border right now? And what's the current government doing to try to get it under control? We're talking to Teresa Cardinal Brown of the Bipartisan Policy Center next. But first, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsor. Today's episode is brought to you by Lightstream. You know what feels great? Paying off high-interest credit cards, getting a lower rate, and ultimately saving money. Lightstream offers credit card consolidation loans from 5.95% APR with autopay and excellent credit. So with a credit card consolidation loan, you can combine multiple debts from credit cards into one payment that may also lower your interest rate. And the rate is fixed, so it'll never go up over the life of the loan. Plus, there are no fees. In fact, Lightstream does not even need to say hidden fees because there are just no fees at all. Simply go to lightstream.com/newsworthy and you can put in your personal numbers and see the interest rate you would get with a Lightstream loan. Then if it's a good fit, the Newsworthy listeners can apply now to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. That's lightstream.com/newsworthy. This is subject to credit approval. Rates range from 5.95% APR to 19.99% APR and include a 0.50% auto pay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Go to lightstream.com/newsworthy for all the information. This episode is also brought to you by Noom. If you ever feel lost with all the different information and misconceptions out there about health and habits, Noom works to simplify things and help you turn your personal health goals and aspirations into reality. And not just for the month. Noom uses psychology and education to help you stick with it in the long term. Noom's cognitive behavioral approach is meant to help you build habits without an unrealistic, rigorous plan or unforgiving lifestyle. You set your goals and Noom helps you get there. And Noom knows you're busy and doesn't expect to dominate your life. It expects just 10 minutes a day of your time. And there's no bad food. It's more about understanding cravings, helping you eat and feel better, and knowing how to shop. There's also easy food logging and a way to chart your progress for your own healthier habits. You can sign up for your trial today at Noom, Noom.com/newsworthy. Again, sign up for your trial at Noom, Noom.com/newsworthy. Noom wants you to know there's a science to getting healthier. So go to Noom.com/newsworthy. Okay, now here's my conversation with Teresa Cardinal Brown. Teresa, thank you for coming on the Newsworthy.
I'm glad to be here.
So how would you describe this latest surge and why are so many migrants coming right now?
I would say this is a continuation, if you will, of a migration change that has happened starting in like 2011, 2012, right? Before that time, the vast majority of people coming to the U.S.-Mexico border were Mexicans. But starting in 2011, 2012, more Central Americans come. And that was the first, if you will, surge of unaccompanied children from Central America, such that, you know, for the last decade, we've had more years where Mexicans are a minority of the people at the border than the majority of the people at the border. And that's a significant shift. And so I think we need to recognize that we have seen sort of a fundamental change in the migration patterns at the U.S.-Mexico border in terms of who is coming. The other thing is that the majority of particularly the unaccompanied children and families are not seeking to evade Border Patrol to sneak into the country to work. They're actually turning themselves in and asking for asylum, which is legal to do under our laws. But our systems at the border, our facilities at the border, first of all, were designed when 99% of the people apprehended were Mexicans. Most were single adults. Most were men. Most were trying to come for work. And most could be very quickly returned to Mexico. That is not the case with non-Mexicans. It's not the case with families and kids. And it's not the case if they have applied for asylum. And so we haven't really adapted to that change. The situations in those countries that are driving people to come north have only gotten worse. And so the migration has continued. It is exacerbated by the impact that COVID-19 has had on these Central American countries. It is exacerbated by the fact that they had to deal with back-to-back hurricanes last year, which just devastated them. And that's on top of all of the issues of gang violence and crime and corruption and impunity that is happening in those regions that was driving migration before then.
Walk us through the basics of what happened starting from the moment a Border Patrol agent sees a child crossing the U.S.-Mexico border.
What's happening right now is that the majority of unaccompanied children are crossing in the southern Texas areas of the Rio Grande Valley and Del Rio, Texas, which means they are coming across the Rio Grande River, oftentimes led there by smugglers who put them on rickety floating rafts or sometimes inflatable pool pads and take them across to the landing side on the U.S. side of the Rio Grande River, and then telling them to walk up the path until they find a Border Patrol agent. And then they take them to what primarily now these influx facilities. And then what's supposed to happen is if they're in CBP custody, if they're in Border Patrol custody, within 72 hours, that child is transferred to the Office of Refugee Resettlement. ORR will attempt to contact, their point of contact in the United States, their relative they're supposed to meet up, then do a screening and vetting of that contact to make sure that they are who they say they are, they have a relationship to the child. And then once that's all done, the child can be released to that individual who then becomes responsible for the care of that child while they're going through their immigration process.
And let's be clear about the difference between an unaccompanied minor who shows up and sees a Border Patrol agent versus even children with a legal guardian or families that are showing up.
Until recently, most families were sent pretty quickly back to Mexico under the so-called Title 42 COVID order. However, the capacity of the shelters is limited. So Mexico has said, we can't take back these families anymore. So in those cases, the families have been being released into the communities, either with a notice to appear for their immigration court hearing sometimes down the line, or sometimes with a notice that just says, when you get to your destination, check in with the immigration courts there.
And is there nonpartisan data that shows what those families are doing after being released? Are they showing up to their court dates? Are they following up with the immigration offices?
It's not just one hearing before an immigration judge. There's usually a series of hearings. So I think the data is pretty clear that most people show up for the majority of their hearings. But when you get to that last stage, there may be more people that don't necessarily show up. And so that's an issue for how do you better manage those cases.
What are a couple of the main things the current government is doing to try to slow the flow of migrants? And what else could they be doing?
Well, the Biden administration has, although they've pulled back on some things like the Remain in Mexico policy, they have left in place probably the biggest thing that allows them to, if you will, keep people from coming to the United States, and that's the Title 42 order. Until recently, Title 42 still applied to the majority of people arriving at the border, whether it's families or single adults. It is still applied to almost all single adults, and the majority of arrivals are still single adults. I think we should reaffirm that right now. Although families and children have seen significant increases, they're not the majority of arrivals right now. Single adults still are, and they are being returned back and trying again. So that Title 42 order, particularly as it applies to families and single adults, is really, I think, the one thing that is managing, if you will, the number of arrivals that Border Patrol has to deal with on any given day. I think we've also seen that in recent days that the Biden administration has tried to work with Mexico and countries in Central America to reinforce their own borders. It's not clear entirely what that means. I think there's a lot of moving pieces here that maybe at the end, when taken all together, can have a significant impact on managing the migration flow, but they're all still in their nascent stages.
Anything else you want to add or just a final takeaway for our audience?
I think that like many, many things when it comes to immigration, it's complicated, right? But what I would say that is probably universal is this sense of just desperation, that they are desperate to leave where they are and find safety and security somewhere else, and that somewhere else is preferably in the United States. So I think we have to wrestle with that, that if we are trying to increase enforcement or deterrence against people who are that desperate, it leads us to basically trying a race to the bottom to treat them worse than the situation they left. And that's not sustainable. That's not viable. And so we need to find a better way.
Well, thank you to both of our experts for their insights today. And thank you for listening. We'll continue to keep you updated as the situation at the border evolves. So be sure to join me again for our regular episodes, providing all the day's news in about 10 minutes every Monday through Friday. We'll be back on Monday with your next news roundup. Until then, have a great weekend.